welcome to the Inspired Intentions podcast with Skyterra Wellness. If you've been too busy and not taking care of yourself, it's time to reset habits and plunge into your new normal. Jeff and Rachel back here with you today, and we have a really exciting topic.
We sure do.
Oh my gosh. Like, the brain? Is that what we're talking about today?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the brain.
Oh my gosh.
And we're going to talk about how to change thought patterns, which can be really intimidating for a lot of people, but I have confidence in our really great guest.
Yeah, I think she can do it. I think she can help many of us at home start to rewire things, start to kind of shift how we're looking at a lot of different things.
And I think, you know, going into this podcast, well, let's first introduce Shannon. This is Shannon Worley. She's the lead therapist at Skyterra. Hi, Shannon. Welcome.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Shannon, so much for being here.
So nice to have you, Shannon.
Thanks, Jeff.
And I think what I was just saying was, going into this podcast, you know, Shannon is a therapist, and she's going to give us some really specific ways that we can change our thought patterns, especially around food and coping skills. And I would say, you know, I know that a lot of folks listen to podcasts when you're driving. Maybe save this one for a time when you can give your full attention to listening, because I think there's going to be some really powerful things knowing Shannon and knowing what she's bringing to the table. So maybe save this for when you can be in a quiet space and really truly listen. But just to kick things off, we were just chatting before we started recording, and Shannon, just as we were about to start recording, had this really great message. And I wanted to share that with you. We actually kind of stopped talking about it so that we could share it with everybody. And that's called Riding the Wave. Do you want to talk about that, Shannon?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, actually. So Riding the Wave is this concept, and we have it played into rewiring the brain. So Riding the Wave is that we are sitting with uncomfortable feelings and riding the wave so that we're able to learn how to change our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors through sitting through uncomfortable feelings. So the most intense that a feeling can come to us is for 60 to 90 seconds. And if we can begin to learn how to, number one, be aware of that, number two, to be able to sit with that in a safe place and get through it, then we can learn to become more resilient. We can learn to change our thoughts, which then allow us to be with those feelings, whether they're uncomfortable or not uncomfortable. And then we're able to change our behavior after that. So riding the wave is really just riding that intense wave of 60 to 90 seconds of those feelings that we want to call uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. So what you're initially saying is, whenever feelings happen in our world, the intensity level can almost cause a quick reaction. We can maybe not pause, we can not reflect, and it can lead us astray into maybe some of these difficulties we have around food or just how we're looking at different things or different relationships in our life as well.
Absolutely, 100%.
And I love the perspective of that too, Shannon, because I think a lot of times difficult feelings can come up and you feel like you're going to feel that way forever. But knowing that the strongest that it's going to be is happening right now, but only maybe for the next 60 to 90 seconds, mm-hmm. is just a really great way to, like you said, sit with it, have perspective about it, and begin to learn how to cope. And that's what we're talking about today, which is coping, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to label, our society makes us feel like we need to label our feelings as good or bad or right or wrong when they really just are. And that if we can understand that and know that when that intensity comes, if we're able to develop more helpful coping skills, like Jeff said, then we can respond versus react, which is a huge game changer, especially when it comes to going to the food, whatever that is for you, that is not that most helpful coping skill.
I like the reference too, because sometimes I don't think we realize how big a wave is. So if you think back to when you went boogie boardy on the beach, you sometimes catch a wave that takes you further than you expected to go. And so I think that theme will be woven throughout in our conversation of like, okay, certain feelings may stir up different things. And so how do we plan for that wave, but still go in with the expectation, understanding that we can't predict every wave that's going to come our way each day.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
We're getting into it.
Yeah.
It's time. Let's do it.
So a few weeks ago, we had a podcast. We had Lindsay Ford, Jeff's wife, on, and she was talking about just, you know, ditching the diet mentality. And I would say that this podcast is almost coming at it in a completely different way. So Shannon's going to bring the therapeutic aspect to thinking about food and handling food and developing coping skills for behavior changes in a completely different way from a different perspective. And, you know, one of the things that we had talked about with Lindsay was this idea of overeating and almost binging. And Lindsay had helped us understand the difference between overeating and, you know, what a true binge looks like. But, you know, how do most people think about overeating in that way?
I think most people feel like that's the only tool they have. It's what's been with them for a long time, maybe. That's what they learn to do. Food, it has lots of different places and uses in our life. And I think that people often feel that that's the thing that's going to comfort them. And so we're all looking for love. We're all looking for something, a deeper need to be met. And often it's food that we go to. And so people can view that as their coping skill, their main coping skill. So that they're meeting those needs, when in reality, there are more helpful coping skills that will meet our needs. People feel like it's their fault, that they're alone, they're ashamed, they think something's wrong with them. Why can't, you know, why do I keep doing this? What is it about me that won't allow me to choose something different in the moment? So I think those are some general ways that people think about overeating.
When you hear guests at SkyTerra who say, you know, this is what I've been dealing with, what are some common themes that you hear from people at the beginning of their program or at the beginning of their work with you versus the end? How, you know, what kind of feedback do they give you on this was really helpful for me or this is how I've been able to change?
Yeah, so I think the number one thing that we get is that I never really understood that I've been using the food to meet a deeper need. Mm-hmm. That I've been going to the food and I don't really know why. I know it's related to feelings maybe, but I really just can't get to the bottom of what is going
on. So they have the feelings, they are somewhat aware of them. However, there's not a connection or like a very direct connection with the overeating.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, some people come, you know, everybody comes with a different stage of change. And so some folks really don't know that it's about the feelings. I would say the majority of people do. Like Jeff said, there's an awareness. It's just that there's like this gap in between the awareness of the feeling and how can I sit through it? How can I ride that wave without always turning to the food?
What makes people feel like it's their fault? I think that's kind of a dilemma with health in general, is that like there's almost like a moral obligation of like, we should eat a certain way. We should move our bodies a certain way. We should go to bed at a certain time. Have you pinpointed in your experience why people play the blame game?
I think it's our society. I think it's those shoulds and should nots. I think we have been conditioned that we are supposed, just like you said, we're supposed to do X, Y, Z to meet an end goal, and that we're not focusing on the quality of life that we have. We're constantly trying to meet the next goal. And so what happens if we get to that goal and we actually don't meet it, right? Mm. And what kind of life are we living? What kind of quality of life? Are we being true to our values? Are we being true to who we are? Or are we just constantly trying to get to the next goal that we think is going to make us happy? And so therefore, I think that plays into why people think it's their fault. You know, I failed at this, I can't meet this goal, or I did meet this goal and I'm still not happy. I'm still mm-hmm. not where I thought I should be. So I think that's a huge part of why people do feel like it's their fault.
Yeah, I think the bringing up this expression of I should be a certain way is something that faces each of us. And so I hear you saying that sometimes we'll blame ourselves because it didn't go exactly the way we thought it would. And it can be situational. It can be just a small behavior we're trying to work on. And specifically around eating, it's so interesting how eating specifically, you tend to maybe even think to yourself, even if your relationship is strong with eating from a standpoint, you feel good about the choices you're making and there's not as much shame around it, that like it, even when you pick up ice cream, that thing still goes through my mind of like, man, should I really be eating ice cream today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I want to point out here that this is a lifelong thing. Our brains, again, are conditioned. We have this thing called our inner critic, which is actually not really us. Our inner critic is not even our own voice. I mean, it's living inside of us, right? So we think it's our own voice. But the reality is that inner critic is made up of something maybe some girl or guy said to you in the third grade. Mm. Maybe it's something your mom or dad said to you at a certain point. Maybe it's something your grandma said, your friend said. And then all of a sudden, we start to take these parts, right? And then we embody those as if they're us, when reality is that they're not. And then this inner critic starts going and going. Mm. And then there's those thoughts. So, yes. Man, should I really be eating this ice cream? For whatever somebody told me, you know, 2 years ago, or whatever I told myself about this. It takes a long time it takes a long time, and it also does not take a long time. You can do this work immediately, but just knowing that because our brains are so conditioned, that it really is a process of learning to unwire.
Yeah. And what I hear you saying is it can come from family, it can come from friends, it can come from experiences. However, it also sounds like a large majority of this comes from just how we're talking to ourselves. And that inner critic develops over time where, you know, you think about it, behaviors are groomed. Like we do what we do just because we've always done it. Mm-hmm. So in this scenario of overeating, some of it or feeling shame before we eat a certain food can probably be related to what we've told ourselves and what we've heard around us.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So, Shannon, if this is starting to ring true for people at home, what would you suggest the first step be in, you know, are we looking to silence that critic? Are we looking to talk back to them? What should somebody do?
So, we're never going to be able to silence our inner critic. Thoughts are always going to come.
So, wait, I can't wake up tomorrow and not have these thoughts. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. No.
Man, sorry, listeners. That's the next episode.
Yeah, right.
So just stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
No, but there is hope. There is hope here. Yeah, so the inner critic is always going to be there. The key is learning to replace those unhelpful thoughts with more helpful thoughts. Mm. And so our thoughts aren't good or bad, right or wrong. Sometimes they're not even based in reality. Mm. And so often we get our feelings, which happen from our neck down, right, enmeshed with our thoughts. So we're like thinking feeling. And so I think the first step would be to understand that those thoughts are going to come. There's nothing wrong with you. Your thoughts are not good or bad, right or wrong. And so when they come, just know that. And know that that inner critic is going to be loud. Right? Especially when you're trying to change the way you view yourself, how you feel and your behavior, you're going to have your own pushback with yourself. And sometimes that inner critic is going to get stronger and stronger.
I think this is such an important first step. It's almost like acknowledgement in the beginning. Acknowledge
yes.
that you have an inner critic. Acknowledge that other people have this similar struggle. And I think that's what kind of like unites us as humans and, you know, individuals who are trying to take these intentions and make a new normal. It's really something that can connect us and be very powerful when we acknowledge that like every single one of us has that inner critic who's can trip up our eating patterns, can trip up any, even just the way we think about ourselves.
And I think it's powerful too, what Shannon said, which was that critic is not you. Mm. It's an amalgam of maybe everybody who's ever said something hurtful to you.
That's right.
In yeah. your life.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just when it comes, you're going to have to plop it on a cloud. I like to use this analogy that when an unhelpful thought comes to you or your inner critic is talking very loudly, that you can just think about the sky and these clouds are going to come and you can pop that unhelpful thought in that cloud and let it go.
What if there's no clouds in the sky that day?
Yeah. Okay.
Can I put it somewhere else?
You know, we'll switch to the checkerboard.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like I like to think of us as we are like the sky or the checkerboard, and our thoughts are either like the weather or the pieces, mm-hmm. right? So they're like constantly moving and changing. And we're never actually going to be able to silence them, but we can change our relationship to how we view them and then how we respond versus react to those.
Wow.
So would you say that figuring out the response or the reaction is going to be the second step?
Well, I think the second step might be awareness, acknowledgement. And then the second step might be, not might be, but is just self-love and patience. And then I think the third step would be, yeah, like the work, right? It's all the work. The third step is really going to be figuring out what are your values? What kind of quality of life do you want to have? What would you rather do than go to the food? You know, and it could be that it's alcohol. It could be that it's anything else. It, you know, we're focusing on food, but so often we have these other unhelpful coping skills. So what would you rather do, right? What would you want in your life than always putting that energy towards thinking about that or going in that direction?
So step three, you're starting to kind of retool the picture, whether that's the picture of yourself, you're starting to really see how you want to feel despite how you might currently be feeling.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's starting to get a little bit more tangible at this point is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And Shannon, if we could just take a step back, I'd love to hear your perspective on that self-love and patience piece, because that's something that we talk about on the podcast is having compassion for yourself. But I'd love to hear from a therapeutic perspective,
sure.
What that means and what that means for people.
Yeah. So self-love, self-acceptance, self-care is a very big topic right now, right? I mean, it always needs to be. But it's not just bubble baths and essential oils or, you know, cuddling
up in your... What if our listeners like essential oils?
I mean, that's great.
Are we sure we're not offending anybody right now?
Those are part of it.
Part of it.
Yeah. I said it's not always.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's like sometimes I think with self-care or even rewiring our brain, it's like, oh, I can just do one or two things and it's going to be solved.
Yeah. So it's this concept of sometimes self-care is actually working through the hard stuff. It's having those hard conversations. It's setting those hard boundaries. It's sitting, it's riding the wave. It's feeling uncomfortable. So sometimes when we get to the other side, we're really accepting ourselves and wanting to change behavior. We have to go through the challenge. We have to go through the difficulty. And that's not always viewed as self-care, right? That's usually what we want to run from. Mm. That's usually what we don't want to experience and why we are actually going to the food, because we are trying to stuff this stuff down. And so self-care, it is essential oils. It is bubble baths when those are appropriate. And then it's also this concept of working through the difficulty. Being uncomfortable, being able to have difficult conversations so that we can be our true authentic selves and love ourselves.
Yeah. So what you're kind of expressing is you cannot find a deeper self-love, like a deeper connection with yourself, if you don't focus on those things that aren't feeling great for you. And it's almost like it can start with some of those small steps that we're joking about here, but then it doesn't end there. You have to kind of look at those boundaries, look at the things that you have more responsibility over, because I think I always like to remind folks that they have kind of a tolerance when it comes to each of these kind of topics we're discussing, in that the body can only tolerate so much, the mind can only tolerate so much, and if we don't do the work that's necessary, then we can fall into this trap of these feelings, and overeating is sort of at the tail end of all of that.
Right, right. And you talked about tolerance. There's a distress tolerance. We actually want to be able to increase that. So when we're having distress, we want to develop a tolerance for that. You know, we talk about stress a lot and getting rid of stress, and well, we really just want to change our relationship to it. We really want to redefine it, because we need to build that resiliency up so that we're able to tolerate distress. That's where it really begins.
That's fantastic. I mean, Rachel and I, our background's a little bit more on the fitness side of things, totally can relate, is like the purpose of hitting a tough training session is to really build up so you can come back stronger the next day. And it almost sounds like we should be doing the same things with our mental health.
Yes, exactly.
Sweet.
And then, Shannon, can you talk to us a little bit more about, I've heard you say before this, kind of how thinking can get in the way, how negative thinking can get in the way. And, you know, we've talked about where we want to focus our thoughts to, but what are some roadblocks that people are going to encounter, and then how can they get through those?
So I would say the biggest roadblock would be the inner critic, right? So when we start to think, I'm not worth it, I'm not lovable, it doesn't matter anyway, oh, I had a slip, I might as well just go all in, right? So this all or nothing mentality, I think, is the biggest roadblock. We start to have those thoughts, and then all of a sudden, all the work that we've been doing just kind of goes to the wayside. It doesn't matter anyway, because I went back to doing this. If I could, you know, just encourage people to really understand that slips are going to happen, and that the thinking is going to happen again, like we were talking about before, and that we don't have to do this all or nothing mentality. There's a beautiful gray area in everything. Even when it comes to changing behavior, it takes time. It takes practice. It takes increased awareness and just understanding that if there is a slip, or if I have, you know, I don't wake up that morning and do my morning gratitude, and I, you know, didn't go to the gym today. Sometimes that's what we need. Other times we need to challenge ourselves to push a little bit further, but just knowing that we don't have to go into that all or nothing mentality, that there is that gray area.
Well, I think we condition the response as well. So it's like, if, you know, we've always tried something and then we've seen it as like a failure, it can become our new normal where, okay, we slipped, so everything's over now, back to the drawing boards again, I need a different plan in place. When in actuality, what I've heard from you is you have to spend some time in it to really understand whether it was an actual slip or not. Because when you think of like success, any achievements in life, individuals who are highly successful, there's always a failure or there's always a quote unquote slip that led them to doing something great. And whether that's something great in their life or whether that's just an improvement on their inner critic and how they're handling that, I think we have to remember that we have to recondition the response versus just assume that it can happen yesterday.
That's right. Yeah. And it's really about those small steps. It's really about those learning moments. It really is about learning from the failures, if you want to call them that. I like to look at them as, you know, just like Jeff said, it's just like a reconditioning. It's just a time to say, okay, how can that teach me? How can that show me what's going on? Right. So if we're looking at food specifically, what could have happened today? Could have happened this past week, that I could have had this slip. Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense. I was hurt. I had a really long day at work. Somebody said something to me that caused me to get angry. I don't know. There's just a variety of things. But just really using those as, what can this teach me?
Shannon, would that be an example of kind of the work that you can do on your own? Because I think maybe for folks listening at home, I think there's a lot that, obviously, working with a therapist, working with, you know, someone with your background is going to be really helpful. But what can they do on their own to kind of start to take the steps towards coming up with a new coping skills and healing, really?
Yeah, so I would start with a support system, honestly. It doesn't have to be that you leave and go home and get a therapist. It does mean I would look at your support system. Because the people that you surround yourself with, you would like for them to be supportive and healthy. So I would look at those relationships and make sure that you have that support before you start to engage in any kind of self-awareness work. Starting a journal, really, I think that would be a really good first step, to go home and just kind of journal about what's going on in your day. Journal about your feelings that come up when certain things happen. Triggers, right? Identifying triggers. How did I feel around that? Where did that feeling live in my body? What came up for me in my body, so that you begin to notice, oh, I'm feeling a certain way in my body. I must be sad. I must be angry. I must be happy, because it's all together, tied in together. And when you can connect back to your body, then you're able to start being more aware and mindful, which is huge. So journaling, identifying triggers, paying attention to where the feeling lives in your body.
Can you say more about that, where the feeling lives in your body?
Yes, yes. So I think most of us would know that when a strong feeling comes up for us, we actually can feel it somewhere in our body. So I'll use myself for example. When I get anxious, or not so much anxious, but more like that anxious, frustrated feeling, the back of my shoulder gets really tense. Like, and it's always my right shoulder for whatever reason. And I feel like a little drop in my stomach. And so I know that when, you know, because I know that that's what happens, that means I'm anxious or angry, right? But even before that, I start to notice what things make me feel that way. So that if I know something like that's coming up, like a social event, anything like that, I can give myself some more self-care. I can go ahead and prepare because I know that stuff's going to come up for me in my body.
You're talking about getting in front of those triggers is what I'm
hearing. Absolutely.
You're making sure that you know how you're going to feel or try to identify it. It's not going to be a perfect scenario every time.
Right,
but then
right.
You can employ one of these self-care strategies to really make yourself not feel that way, to get in front of it.
That's it. Exactly. Nice. Yep. Getting in front of it. And developing a mindfulness practice, meditation is huge. And slowing the nervous system down so that you're able to get ahead of the triggers and recognize.
So like a mindfulness practice, like meditation, breath work, essentially this is another proactive strategy so that you're not reactive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
How would you work that into someone's life who's already very busy?
Easy. I know people think it's not easy, but it can be very easy. You can literally start with getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth. That is a mindfulness practice. You can be in the sink, not in the sink, at the sink.
That would definitely be awkward. I think our executive producer could figure that one out.
You probably can.
Well, the jury's still out on that one.
Yeah. Well, you can be at the sink and notice what the temperature of the water is. Are the brushes on your toothbrush hard or soft? What do they feel like against your gums? How does the toothpaste taste? What does it feel like coming out when you spit it in the sink? These are ways that we can start becoming more mindful. Mindfulness doesn't always have to look like a meditation practice, although that's amazing. But when we just start to slow down and pay attention. So let me back up. So mindfulness is we pay attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the moment, with no judgment. That's what it is. And so if we can do that and not judge ourselves for what's coming up, whether it's 1 minute a day brushing our teeth, whether it's holding our coffee cup in the morning, feeling how warm it is, those are ways to easily start to implement a mindfulness practice.
That seems really accessible.
Yeah.
And I like how it's part of a routine that folks may already be doing.
Where
we're doing this, we're just maybe not within ourselves and recognizing some of those small points that you're describing.
Exactly.
Shannon, if you're trying to rewire your brain around your relationship with food, should you avoid a mindfulness practice that focuses on food to begin with? We had talked with Lindsay about having a mindful meal and, you know, shutting off technology. Would you recommend starting with something like brushing your teeth just to kind of make it a little bit more accessible and easier way into mindfulness? Or do you think that your mindfulness practice should be specific to behaviors you're trying to address?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think the mindful eating is awesome because it really is allowing us to change our relationship to food in that moment. Whereas brushing our teeth is not necessarily changing our relationship to the food, although it's still slowing our nervous system down. So I think if you're able to incorporate both, I think that's really optimal. If you're not ready to jump in to the mindful eating, because some people were all at different stages of change, then I would begin with the smaller, more accessible practices like brushing your teeth, enjoying your coffee, noticing how the wind's blowing on your walk, whatever that is. However you can incorporate it into your daily routine, like Jeff said, I think is the beginning of it.
Gotcha.
The important piece.
Yeah.
Like we always talk about building habits.
Yeah, start slow. Don't line up too many dominoes at once. And I like how in this case, it's not directly related to the behavior that you feel like needs to switch up a little bit in your life. It's more directed at just the practice of mindfulness.
Yeah,
and if we build more mindfulness in everything we do, then that will long-term probably rewire our brains to stop looking at things as like problems or things as like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And more just recognizing that a problem's going to come up. There's going to be a situation that I'm uncomfortable with, and really understanding that the one problem is always going to lead us to the next problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, then we're going to, that can really weave into more than just our eating habits. It can weave into a lot of other areas that can help us live our best life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Recognizing that life is joyful and life can also be challenging and painful at times. And just knowing that, like, hey, you know, something's going to come again. Right. I think that's great.
And arming yourself with the tools to be able to deal with it when it does.
Exactly.
That's building the tolerance.
It is.
Boom.
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 Shannon, what would you recommend if someone has a quote unquote slip up? So if they, have set themselves on their intention path and then, you know, as you said, life happens and they have a slip, how do they deal with that? What would be the best way?
Yeah, so that's really where that support system is going to come in and preparing for that, okay? Because it's part of the recovery process. I think that's a piece that folks may, you know, they may be afraid to hear that, or they may just not be aware of it, but slips are a part of the recovery process. And so that we can know that, have a support system, have things in place, you're always going to want to give yourself some extra self-care and love, okay? This could be where the bubble bath and the essential oils and those things really come into play right in the moment, because that's something that we can go do immediately to love ourselves.
To reduce the anxiety to that initial intensity that you've described.
Yes.
Do something kind of immediately to help just change that response for the better.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Dang. I think one question to go back to like the slip scenario is I think that can also have to do with the questions that you're posing to yourself. So I think one question that's super simple when we think of wellness coaching and individuals learning from the habits they're trying to build or the slip ups that happen is to really just ask the question of what can I do differently next time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very powerful in any context of, you know, it's almost taking ownership over, man, I want to be better. I want to, you know, improve this intensity that I'm feeling the next time around. So it's just like, what can I do differently next time? And I think you've really hit the nail on the head on like what you can do in the moment. And then also having the second follow-up to that of like, okay, here's what I'm going to do next time.
Yeah. Yes. And that's where I would say the beginning of riding that wave is knowing that there is a next time and that we don't have to, that goes back to that all or nothing mentality, is that there's a slip up. It doesn't mean that I have to go all the way back in. There is a next time. There is tomorrow. I can get up. I can change. I can do something different.
So oceans have multiple waves. So when you go to the beach, there's more than one wave.
It's very deep, Jeff.
That was very deep.
I try to bring it every episode.
I like that.
Not bad.
Yeah.
You can use it. That's all right.
Thank you.
And just kind of to play on what Jeff was saying about a slip and thinking about, you know, that there will be another wave, would those be good topics to journal about? Because I think sometimes, I know people that I've talked to who have tried to journal, they'll get to the blank page and they won't know what to write about.
Right, right. Yeah. So journaling does not have to look a certain way. It does not have to be, I have to tell this story. It can really just be writing words on a piece of paper that just come up for you. So if that's, I think that's a great way to begin. And you can just put words, feelings, certain things on a piece of paper, start with that practice, and eventually you will start to want to express more. And also getting it outside of your body lets it not have so much power over you.
Mm.
So when you're putting your feelings and your thoughts and things that have happened to you on paper, then it's not consuming you, which is a big key component.
there's almost like a separation to it. Able to separate yourself from the feelings in the moment. And I think there's different strategies than just journaling. I mean, that even be just go move your body for 30 minutes, go take a walk, or maybe it's like seek out that relationship, call a friend. And so there's many ways that we can switch up our coping mechanisms to help us move forward.
Yeah. Coping mechanisms are going to be relative to the individual. What might work for one person might not work for the other person. And I think that's an important thing to point out because we often just try what everybody else is doing, right? Mm. And those things are wonderful and they can be useful, but maybe that's just not what's going to work for you in the moment. And to really just find that thing that is going to be the most helpful for you.
Rachel's doing a running streak and I am copying her on that.
Okay. Well, so is that working for you?
It actually is.
All right.
So in this scenario, it worked out. But in every scenario, you're exactly right. It's you shouldn't always do just what that next person's doing.
Only if that person's super cool.
Yeah, only if you like highly respect them and you think they're a good human being. Then you should listen to them.
Definitely.
Well, Rachel's all those things. So there you go. You're welcome.
Shannon, are there any coping mechanisms that we haven't mentioned so far that you have seen that work really well for people?
Yoga.
Mm.
Yoga is a very awesome way to start getting connected back to the body. So being able to feel yourself in space is very helpful, actually, to getting connected to the feelings again and where things come up for you. So I think it's not necessary that you have to develop a yoga practice per se, but maybe there are certain poses that you could do at home that are also easily accessible that could help. And it's, I have found it personally to be very empowering for people to begin to feel their body move in that way again and know that they're in a safe place.
Maybe it's on a certain time in your week too. Instead of it like having to be an everyday thing right out of the gates, maybe you pick one of those days where a lot of these feelings come up for you and you just plan to go to a class. If the weekends are hard for you, maybe there's a nice transition on Fridays where you become more mindful by participating in yoga. So I think there's different ways to even set up that suggestion that can make it more realistic and be very planned and intentional around the waves that you might be always riding.
And if you're looking for yoga routines, we do have skyterraathome.com that has a lot of great routines that you can follow. Yoga, breathing,
meditation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do have an episode upcoming on yoga.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
See, it all fits together.
That's exciting.
I think intentions are pretty universal and we can grab different things that will fulfill them. So
we named it well, this podcast.
Wow. Finally. It was a process.
Okay. So to summarize, if you're starting to think about rewiring your brain, the first thing that you want to do is identify those unhelpful thoughts, put them on a cloud or a checkerboard, whatever image you need. That's going to help with awareness. And then also along the lines in terms of awareness is knowing that uncomfortable feelings are going to come. They're never going to stop. But the strongest they're going to be are 60 to 90 seconds. Practicing self-love, being compassionate with yourself, having patience for yourself. And then the work and the coping skills, which are going to look different for everybody.
And to reiterate the coping skills around the cues and the triggers, to really look at those triggers, have some specific game plan for how you're going to handle triggers differently. And then there's even that second step of like, okay, it happened. Here's where I can go with it.
Yes. Yeah. Getting ahead of the triggers, having that plan, and then figuring out what can I do different next time.
Nice.
And it's a process, a lifelong process, like you said.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did we miss anything, Shannon?
I think you guys nailed it.
Well, I think you nailed it, Shannon.
Shannon.
I'm quite sure there's some topics in here that we have not covered to the extent that we did today. And so really kind of looking at that inner critic, a lot of the things you've explained to us today, I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners to kind of look at things in a different light, but to also look at them with a really new, powerful perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thanks,
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
We've enjoyed having you. So the Inspired Intentions podcast is a production of SkyTerra Wellness. Special thanks to our executive producer, Alan Broyhill. Send us your questions and comments to inspiredintentions@skyterrawellness.com. Rate and review us. Give us 5 stars on iTunes.
And if you're not going to give us 5 stars, just
keep
refrain.
It to yourself.
Yeah, it's okay to keep it to yourself.
Join us next week as we cut through the unrealistic noise on diets and fitness and show you how healthy living fits seamlessly into your already busy life. Thanks again, Channing.